A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery. It's brought to you by our friends at useonlyasdirected.org. They got a three-part solution for the opioid epidemic, and that is speak out, opt out, and of course, throw out. I am Casey Scott. That's Dr. Matt. What do you know, buddy?
Oh, a couple of things, but not too much.
So once again, for people who are just maybe tuning in and this is their first episode of Project Recovery, your credentials are?
I'm a clinical psychologist, so I have a doctoral degree in psychology. I'm fortunate enough to be as part of the University of Utah. I'm a clinical professor up there, and more importantly, I'm your buddy.
Yeah, and my credentials are I've seen 1,000 faces and I've rocked them all.
That's right.
Stole that from Bon Jovi, bro.
Or did he steal it from you?
I don't know. John Bon Jovi's a handsome man.
He is a good-looking guy. That's true.
Hey, so, you know, this is brought to you by our friends at useonlyasdirected.org, and they talk about the opioid epidemic. Do you feel like the epidemic is, we're making some ground on it?
Definitely. I think for sure. I mean, if you look at the late 90s, early 2000s, we've had people come on and talk about how crazy it was back then and you know, Oxycontin and other opiates just being prescribed all over the place and a lot of doctors being corrupted and making their drug dealers, basically, and that leading into lots of heroin use. So I think with the education, people working together with physicians and nurses to help stop, you know, the corrupted ones from being able to be in the system, helping people understand. I think that's the education is so vital in any, progressive behavior change. And just knowing that those things are so dangerous because a doctor prescribes it, we think, oh, well, you know, we see them as good people and they are. But so therefore what they give me is OK. And you have to learn to be a better consumer of your own health care. And I think the solution of, you know, talking to doctors, choosing other options besides taking an opiate if possible, and then getting rid of those old prescriptions. I've even done that where I've gone in and, you know, found old bottles of prescriptions and tossed them.
You know, we had somebody in here from the opioid task force, and they said they did a take back day, and they said they got 1,800 pounds.
That just blows me away.
1,800 pounds in one day.
In one day. And that's a lot of little pills. That's a lot of little pills. And that's kind of scary if you think that much medication is just floating around people's houses.
Yeah. They say do not flush it down. You can go to a lot of pharmacies have take back, a lot of police stations, a lot of hospitals.
And the police stations aren't going to, you know, shake you down or anything.
No.
They want you to come in and get rid of that stuff. And most pharmacies, most hospitals have places you can drop it. Yeah.
All right. So here's a little behind the scenes of what goes on in Project Recovery. You went through all the schooling, and so you've got the big brain. So I'm tasked with getting our guests and finding people for our program.
I've got student loans, though, and you don't. So that's the difference. Yeah.
I was this close to graduating.
Yeah.
College. Yeah. And my mom and dad said, hey, we're not going to pay anymore. I said, I'm done. I really should go back and get those.
You might want to.
Yeah, because we've seen so many people who have come through the other side of addiction that have gone on to get their master's, to go back to school and find certain things. But to get back on point is that I'm supposed to get guests for our show. Well, I didn't have a guest this week, so I called up our friend Ian, who runs Fit to Recover. Mm-hmm. And everyone's telling me that his story's amazing. So I was hoping, praying, fingers crossed. Yo, Ian, it's Casey. Who? Casey.
And for people listening, that is how you actually talk.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I said, hey, any chance you could do a podcast tomorrow? He goes, no, man, I can't, but I can do it in 2 weeks. So we got a guest in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Ian's going to be on. I said, you got anyone who's got a story that they'd like to tell? And he goes, nah, I don't. And then I said, okay. So then I was like, crap, what am I going to do? 10 minutes later, the phone rings. Yo, I got a guy for you, but he's only got 8 months sobriety. Will that work for you? And I was like, yep.
We have no limitation on that. I mean, I'd love a person at any phase of their process to come in and talk. So I think 8 months is great.
So that's what this podcast is about.
And that's real, right? I mean, that's a hard time.
Yeah, because, yeah, I want to know what somebody, because I've been there right now, is currently 8 months sober. What's their mindset? What are their goals? What are things, their obstacles in front of them? So let's talk to him. So he says, I got a guy, and I just met him. You just met him, and now we're all going to meet him. It's Jeff. Jeff, how are you, man?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing really good. Thank you.
All right, so Jeff, how young a man are you?
So I am 40 years old young.
Okay, yep. I like that. And you got 8 months sobriety.
I do, yes.
All right, before we get to that, let's hear the story of Jeff. Where does it begin?
Okay, man, it begins really 1980. I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, you know, it just really, the story of where my addiction kind of started was when I was about 13 years old. So we're talking 1993.
Okay, a year after I graduated, 1993, young Jeff's got some wide leg jeans on. He's listening to Hanson. What is the first substance that you experimented with?
Yeah, so, you know, just to kind of fit in and to be a part, you know, it started off with alcohol, and that was kind of the big thing, and wanting to be a part of, you know, the older crowd. And, you know, back then it was, you know, it was pot. It was hallucinogenics. It was the mushrooms, the acid, and the alcohol. So it started off there.
At 13, you were doing all those?
Unfortunately, yes.
And was that,
yes.
You said you wanted to hang out with the older kids. Those,
yes.
You were in junior high, so these were like high school kids.
That, yes. And they were the neighbors down the road. So,
what part of Salt Lake did you grow up in?
So I actually grew up on the east side. You know, it's kind of strange. There's a rehab called Brighton Recovery Center. It's at the mansion in Sandy.
I know exactly where it is.
And the weird part is I used to play in that house when I was younger. So it's a complete trip. So
when it was a private home?
Yeah, so somebody owned it. There were people in it, and I used to play with the kids. I used to play around the house. And it just so happens that this house actually turned into a rehab. So I lived six houses up. It's on Robideau Road. And, man, I just made a complete 360. It was just so bizarre how it just, you know.
Did you actually go to Brighton?
I went to Brighton. In fact, I went to Brighton High School. I went through that mansion. And kind of how it started real quick, just this last time, well, I was in detox.
Wait, we can't go to detox yet.
Okay.
Let's start out when you were 13.
Yep.
You're doing mushrooms,
yes.
You're doing pot, you're,
yes,
doing alcohol, and you did it just to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living in a neighborhood that would have been an envious sort of upper-class neighborhood. I mean, what we would typically think of as like high functioning, educated, you know, it's a nice place to live. Like, this is where people want to move to.
It is, and it is, and that's why it gets so confusing. I mean, I have amazing family, supportive parents. I didn't grow up in an area that you would think that there would be drugs there. And, you know, this is basically for me back then, you know, just looking at it, it's like, I had a condition, a mental condition. It's like a disease of the mind. And it was like a war zone in my mind. You know, I couldn't sit with myself at 13.
Do you feel like you had, like, is it ADHD?
I think I had that. But no matter what I did, I just didn't want to be me. I wanted to be the cool kid. I wanted to fit in. You know, I wanted to be away from the family.
But isn't that every kid?
Well, I mean, to some degree, I think we, you know, kids at that age, you know, you start to, the early stages of adolescence, most kids start becoming very self-conscious, yeah, about, you know, am I cool? Do I look cool? Are my clothes, right, good? Whatever. And wanting to be cool. But it sounds to me like for you, it was kind of ratcheted up a few notches. Did you have a heart? You said you had, let's talk about your mind for a second. So what's going on? Like, were you that kid that had a hard time falling asleep and thinking about a lot of stuff? Were you very active and hyper, or was it something else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would stay up and I would overthink things. And, you know, I mean, I played sports. My parents showed up to all the practices, all the games. I loved sports. But I had this other side, you know, this other side, this...
Were you an impulsive kid?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think a lot of people at that age, you go through puberty and you do have some major biological changes, including your mind and how it operates. And sometimes people develop what's called anxious thinking, where their mind just kind of runs and runs and runs. And that's very distracting. It can be upsetting. Is that in the ballpark of what you experienced?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I was very distracted and... you know, it was just, I just felt like I just wasn't okay. I just felt like I just wasn't okay.
You needed something to feel better?
Yeah,
so
I mean,
when you took the alcohol, the weed, the hallucinogenics, did you feel more yourself or did you think you felt more yourself?
Yeah, so I remember exactly where I was when I first took my first drink. And when I did, I had this feeling.
Where were you?
So I was actually my it was like a neighborhood party, and you know back then things were a little bit different. You didn't have the clickers on the tops of the alcohol, and you know you said, hey, pour me a double, it's no big deal. You know, I don't think there was any laws on how much you could drink back then, and so you know I snuck some peppermint schnapps out of the cabinet. And, you know, I put it back. And I remember I had this feeling of just being calm. You know, I was calm. It put me in another place where I didn't have to really think about things. And it just slowed me down. And I liked it. I liked it.
You know, that's a common theme in these podcasts that we do, where somebody describes the first time they took an opioid, the first time they took a drink.
Right.
Something slowed down in them, something stopped, and for the first time in a long time or forever, they felt okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's comforting, calming, like you said.
Yeah. And it was. I mean, I don't want to discount all the awesome things that I did when I was a kiddo. You know, we were able to travel. You know, we were able to do a lot of fun things. It's just, it started with the mind. And
so, young Jeff, how long did you experiment with all those drugs? All throughout high school?
Yeah. So, you know, it got out of hand. I started smoking. You know, for some crazy reason, I could handle it. Even with the older guys, I could put it back. I could just hang with them, and I just had a high tolerance. And started smoking weed, and you know, started doing less sports. And I went to this football camp up at University of Utah for the Mighty Mites, the Bantams. You know, for the like. You guys know what it is.
Yeah,
it's just for the Little League football.
Yeah.
And anyways, there's just this football camp, and I remember I was smoking weed, and everybody else was getting bigger, taller, stronger, and I seemed to kind of just stayed the same size. And so that was kind of discouraging. But I started getting into more, just smoking more pot, you know, getting into that place of relief. And I remember, I just got into it. I had a girlfriend. And it just got out of hand. I got sent to a wilderness camp for about 11 months.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, you must have done something, the guy you sent to wilderness camp, because I've never heard of parents who just look at you and go, I think you need a wilderness camp. So
yeah.
What happened that got you sent to wilderness camp?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it was a process that led up to that. You know, I started getting into smoking opium, and, you know, I just couldn't quit that lifestyle. You know, it was just...
Was it getting you in trouble in any way?
I was getting in trouble. I was, you know, not showing up for school. I was bringing pot into the home. My dad could smell it. He was upset. You know, and what happened is, you know, just... I stopped doing the things that I used to do, all the fun things that you do as a kid, you know, rollerblading, sports, just the fun things.
Did you drop off the football team? That's
I did. I dropped off the football team and just basically made doing drugs a full-time position. And my dad saw that. My mom saw that. I got into some trouble. I was doing graffiti, you know, all that stuff that was kind of, the hip hop was getting big. And so I was kind of into that crowd. And I just really got off track. And back in the day, there's this place called Coos Campus in Coos Sharon, Utah. My dad went there, and back then it wasn't a wilderness camp. It was just a camp, summer camp. Go have fun, you know, hunting.
Do a little boondoggle.
Yeah. And so my dad knew those guys that they turned that into a wilderness program for, you know, the troubled juveniles. And so my dad had a connection there, and he thought, you know, it would be a good idea to send me there. And so, you know, I, of course, didn't know about this, but he made arrangements for me to get picked up and to...
They sent a couple big guys out to get you?
I was in my bed, and some dude came in with boots and a cowboy hat. And I'm like, what the... I was like, what is this? You know, and I'm young, and when I was young, I have this ego, you know. I know what I'm doing. Nobody can tell me what to do. And I was just rough. I made myself rough. You know, I was short. I had to fight for myself. And I noticed when I fought, things got better. And people stopped saying things. But anyhow, back to the story. I got picked up by a buckaroo. And I got to tell you, I was heading to a place I've never been before. And I was scared, angry, and... just really resentful.
You're listening to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction, more importantly about recovery. Jeff is talking about his story. We're going to find out what that first wilderness camp looked like coming up in just a few seconds.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
So the cowboy picks you up, drives you down to this wilderness camp, and you didn't see it coming.
Didn't see it coming at all. And, yeah, so I ended up in Coos Sharon, Utah. I think all the roads are dirt roads. Basically, it's in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, okay, as soon as I get there, I'm just going to run. I don't know which direction I'm going, but I got to get out of here.
Right.
I got to get back to this important life that I had of doing drugs.
Hip-hop and graffiti.
You got to do the hip-hop and graffiti. I wasn't going to leave that. And so, yeah, so I showed up there, and kids are cruel, man. They like to bully, especially the kids that were there. So it was co-ed. There was females. There were dudes. And I remember getting in a fight within the first 3 days. But the first day I got there, spent the night, I met another dude named Jeff, and he was from Washington, and he said to me, "We got to get out of here." I said, "That's a great idea."
Jeff's unite.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff squared.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that's what we did. So, you know, it didn't matter where.
So you guys broke out?
We broke out. You know, we're hiding from cars. We're in these little, it's kind of like little ravines. I think that's where they do the irrigation. You know, I don't know. I know it smelled like horse manure, and I'm a city slicker. I mean, I don't know this life at this point. So, anyways, yeah, we're dodging all the headlights, and we get to a point where we're like, dude, we don't know where we're going, and so we're like, dude, I have an idea. Let's just stop a vehicle, hop in, make up a story, and just go to that next place, wherever it is. So he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. So anyways.
The power of Jeff's.
Yeah, the power of Jeff's.
Sounds like a good idea, Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff, great.
Anything but going back. So we're cruising. We're in sagebrush. You know, we're cruising along. We see some headlights. So I go out. I'm on the road walking. And it was an old Jeep Cherokee, old school one.
You know how this is most horror stories start, right?
Right. Netflix original right yeah. now.
I mean, this could be a Netflix movie. I mean, my story's crazy. So anyways, we flag it down. Well, just so happens it's the deputy of the town that's been looking for us. Yeah. So anyways, you know, it's a big old show. Everybody shows up. We head back and they put us in this orange jumpsuit and send us out into the wilderness where we have a can, carrot, onion, some rice, and we have to keep this fire going. We're not together. I'm alone. And in the distance, one of the counselors is watching. And, yeah, so I'm there in the middle of nowhere and just trying to keep my fire going, trying to figure out what's going on, people making fun of me. It's like, you're so stupid. And I just thought to myself, I just don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how this is going to go. So I was there for a week. I came back smelling like the onion and campfire. And, you know, people are laughing. They do it like a level system. So obviously I was at the lowest level and you have to work your way up.
And then you get more freedoms and
You get more freedom. You can go to school. You can do activities. But
you get some beets with your onion and your carrot.
You know, I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was brutal. It was brutal, and I slept on the floor, and it was cold, and it was just miserable.
You did 11 months there.
I did 11 months. Yeah.
And so,
now it sounds sort of like a kid prison. But were they trying to do anything therapeutic or just kind of tough love you?
Well, I got to tell you, they were trying to. Yeah, they were trying to, once you get on a certain level, you can start going to school, like I said. So I thought, you know, the only way for me to get out of here is just to do what they say. And so I kind of started doing that, but I was like, I got to get a hold of my dad. I got to get out of here. So what I did was upstairs, this is true, I wish I could explain this better, but it was like a kitchen office upstairs. It was like a barn, basically, great big barn. So what I did was, I went upstairs. I broke into the office. I called my dad. He didn't pick up. I left a message. So later that morning, I get called in. And he says, hey, your dad called. How did you use the phone? And I'm like, oh, man, this is awful. I just I can't get out of here. So, you know, they put me back on. You know, I just kept going back and back and back.
Kept dropping you down levels.
Kept dropping me down, and you know, people were getting in fights. You know, I was getting in fights. It was brutal. I mean, it was mean.
So after 11 months there, how did you graduate, or did they just say we've done all we can with Jeff?
Well, yes. No, I mean, they were making money. My dad was paying for it, so they wanted to keep me there. And my counselor was the owner. His name is Chad Sorensen, and it's called Sorensen's Ranch. And so he kind of took me under the wing. His wing, and you know, I was starting to, you know, change a little bit. Still had the attitude because I had to. I had to be rough. I had to stand up for myself, and it was just one of those things. But just like in anywhere you go, once you're there for a while, you start building friendships. New people come in, and you start developing kind of that leader role. And yeah, so I got to a certain level, and. Started going to school. Things started to get better. I was. They have these little pods where it's bunk beds. There's four to a pod, and just dudes. And you have. You know. You have to keep your place clean. And it's a level system, a point system. And so there was this dude from Crenshaw. This white dude covered in tattoos. Been in prison most of his life. One of the roughest dudes I've ever met. And he comes in with a clipboard. And every Saturday, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, it's a boot camp where you have to do, you know, the lunges across the gym, the crawls, the sit-ups, the push-ups. It was brutal. And then you had to go feed. We had wallabies, chickens, bunnies, pigs. I mean, you name it. It was unlike Salt Lake. It was a complete change for me. It was a trip. And but yeah, so yeah, so anyways, for whatever reason, I think the dude didn't like me, and I always had to do the boot camp, and we had to do an 8 mile. We had to do an 8 mile hike in the snow. You line up, they give you the jacket, your boots, and you have to stand in a line. They pack sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and bottles of Gatorade, just the mix. You know, the great big gallons.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to walk in a straight line. You have to climb up this mountain. It was brutal. To this day, I can't say that it's helped me one bit.
But you ended up graduating and you move out. So when you get back to Salt Lake, the east side of Salt Lake.
Yes.
What does life look like for young Jeff?
How old are you at this point?
So at this point, I'm 17. And just one thing that I did want to add, it was co-ed, and then I did get my girlfriend pregnant in it. So
while you were there in the
program? While I was there, I got her pregnant.
So you made a girlfriend while
you were
there.
I made a girlfriend, got her pregnant, and... you know, I went off to pick up a bull in Richfield, and this was Chad's son. So we went off to, you know, pick up this bull and bring it back. When I came back, Liz was gone. She's out of the program. So now I come back, and you know, my best friend's gone. And so,
did you know she was pregnant?
I didn't actually. I had no idea. So as soon as they found out she was getting sick, I mean, I didn't know any of this. I didn't. They have a medical staff and you have to line up and do all this stuff. But yeah, I really had no idea. So they pulled her out of the program and, I stayed there, but you know, things got better. I finally went home and, at this point we moved over on about 6400 South and Highland Drive right there by that 7-Eleven, vintage Oak Lane. And, it was a nice area, but at this point I'm pissed. You know, everybody seems to have a routine in high school. Everybody seems to know what they're doing. And I'm still carrying this wilderness camp with me. And it was just really hard for me to connect with people. So I went back to what I know. I went back to what I know and started smoking pot again. And, you know, I tried, you know. But when you're young, it's just so hard. It's just so, so hard. And so, yeah, so that's kind of what that looks like. Wasn't able to finish school. Dropped out. My dad, I don't know if you guys, are you guys from Salt Lake?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So do you guys remember Crossroads Plaza?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, the mall when malls were popping?
Yeah.
Yeah, so my dad started lots of Hots of Pizza, the pizza joint down in the food court.
I've had it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Lots of Hots.
Dude, right on. Lots of Hots Pizza and Pasta.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
That pumps me up. Yeah, so that was his place, and I worked for him when I was a kiddo, And so he, you know, he kind of gave me that work ethic and, you know, so I was working there on and off. And, but at this point, you know, I moved out, you know, my parents gave me an awesome opportunity to change my life. They were doing the best that they could and it just wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. So at this point I'm in their home, I'm going to Cottonwood High School. And it just got in the way of the lifestyle I wanted to live. So I moved out, and the guy I moved in with was not a good dude. And I started going really downhill from then.
We're talking to Jeff. He's talking about his addiction. We're going to find out more about that in the second part of this podcast. Make sure you tune into that. You're listening to Project Recovery right here on KSL.
Of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.